Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about knowledge and social processes. Now, in this podcast, I'm going to try and capture something which I've sort of experienced and know or have discovered as I've gone in and researched areas which is outside the common body of knowledge and experience of things. So certain examples would be, say, studying maths that other people don't normally come across, or studying areas of history or physics, or cases where you get knocked out and you're rehabilitating, you're relearning things, and you're looking at things and you see that knowledge, there's such things as knowledge or know-how, I suppose, know-how and know that. I put those two things together, which I will call know-how as knowledge and know that as information or facts. Those two things together. But looking at that, I come up with the conclusion that there is sort of social forces at work. When you look at a large group of people, there's things which are accepted knowledge and accepted facts, or not accepted facts, that people generally know, and they're self-consistent in a currency. And just sort of looking at it, having experienced it, I've tried to put it all together and come up with a third factor, is that there is a process where this is translated into what I call a social currency. So a social currency is sort of like social money, so to speak, where what you know or facts are exchanged for, I suppose, basically, I suppose, a social currency, and that allows you to progress forward in a group, around in a group, to operate within a group. So this is sort of like behavioural impact of communicating what you know and your facts or your and you don't have to communicate to other people. You can actually gather facts and put it in. So there is a big social story going on where what you know and information has value. So I'll give you an example. Person will come and measure the amount of electricity that you use, and that will be actually converted. I'll just walk a different way this time, and slightly more quiet because the traffic's making a lot of noise. This will be converted into you'll read a meter, you'll convert that by writing it down and in a particular position, that will be a value. You'll be paid for doing that, and that information will go across, and eventually someone else will pay with money for the electricity. And so at a certain point, someone's read it, seen it, and the knowledge and information has come together and it's come across. Now, that's a sort of combination that I sort of see a parallel role of knowledge and information, another currency which we haven't quite got up, and social interaction with it. That's a very money-heavy, information-heavy, but there's a thin, slender process in there to describe exactly what's going on if you had to describe the behaviour of things. So if you were observing this, much as you observe things in the wild, you'd say what is going on. If I can sort of say there's probably a similar type of thing, not money, but if you're observing chimpanzees and fruit, or a whole series of things where knowledge and information are traded such that another totally different thing's coming on. So I could sort of imagine in mating, you know, in a thing you assemble wealth, you display wealth that gets assessed, communicated, and that gives you, I suppose, making right or making desirability. So it's sort of really, really deeply built in. And I'll just give you a story where I'm sort of looking at that, and this is, I suppose, one of the things where you have an incident and you have the luxury of time to analyze it and say, oh, what happened there? So the people, I suppose the fun aspect is I'm at the moment reading through the World Atlas of Cheese. Okay, and I suppose the take home point is that this is defunct knowledge, that as a group, the currency of this knowledge is put aside because it doesn't have social currency with it. Yet it's full of fantastic detailed information, which by itself is amusing. However, the sort of social group says, oh look, this particular book is out of date and it's not worth it. But when you actually take the time, if you have to take the time to read through it, and the people listening to it will come across your reading quite well, and you get the nuances that this particular author is very strongly defending the hygiene of cheese. She's from Holland, and she describes a foot cheese, which the cheesemaker, with quote-unquote clean feet, jumps in and actually stands on the cheese to press out the whey. So one of the major things which happens with cheese is that there's a process which happens, and the curd, it curdles, and the curd goes down, and there's a liquidy stuff called the whey, which I think, it's hard to tell where the fat goes in it. Some fat goes in the curd, some fat goes in the whey, and this is a key separation process, and this is just a small little fact glimmered in through there. That's a little bit interesting. I don't know how you use it, but I suppose the more interesting aspect to me was, yes, there's a yuck fact, there's a humorous sort of a ghoulishness to understand these facts. However, the way that they're received is, in general, there's a general disparagement for ever bother to look at this particular situation. So I can see that being trained to pick up knowledge and assemble it all together is something which has got many social factors determining how it goes. There's it's a very large black cat walking across my path. I suppose I'm going to have some good luck or bad luck. I can't remember what it is. What I'm seeing is an interaction of knowledge and information and society, and that knowledge, that process, creating a social currency, and you gather that social currency, and that tends to guide your attitude to your knowledge and information. So there's a culture input into it, and I want to discuss it a bit more because I can see this very strongly in education, in which where you have things which are clearly, clearly wrong, clearly out of date, but are taught nonetheless, such that students can so the incorrect information is applied social currency, and that social currency process, it has overcome the importance of the information itself, or the currency has meant that we don't even go into these treasure troves of information to pull them out. Or if you do, it's handled in a particular way, and you see very much for any particular piece of information given out, behaviour. So this is really the, I suppose, the central idea I want to get across, is that you've got knowledge, information, a social consequence of that, and a behavior. So the knowledge and information doesn't, well, could make you behave in a particular way. It's the way that that is like a machine, a social machine, goes in, gives social currency, and your behavior affects your behavior responses. Now, I think because people are really built inside this machine, that they can't distinguish, I'm going to make it, say it here first, they can't distinguish between the knowledge, the information, and behavior. It all gets intensely mixed out, and I don't think there's any, you know, standing on a soapbox and say, how do they? I think that just occurs naturally by the way that we teach knowledge, information, and behavior all at the same time, all in a mixed way, and we can't pull things across. And now, one of the, I suppose, the interesting things is that you can pull this apart on several levels. So one is a very close circuit of where people's knowledge and information, the social machine, the behavior, their response, is a very close circuit. And look, I think this has to be true, because if you require a behavior of anything, it requires a negative feedback loop. So your behavior of standing up, your behavior of breathing, all things operate on senses, and the senses come back and coordinate it. So if we've got coordinated knowledge and information of a culture, it means that there must be this behavior system underneath it. And there must also be a lack of awareness of it, because we have to really focus on things which come naturally to us. We can't actually be thinking, oh, why am I standing up? Things actually become naturally to us, but it's only under certain circumstances, when you have difficulty getting balance, that you really focus on and you start to unput the secrets. Now, in my case, so a mental reset button has been set with me, and I've had to really scramble and learn things again. And you don't, I suppose I'm studying and podcasting without the close cultural behavior stop studying. And so I will say, in the case of philosophers or maths or anything like that, study thoroughly all the way through, rigorously, more rigorously, to slowly get things out. And this is sort of like the same knowledge acquisition information process, but it hasn't got the same behavioural caveats on it steering it. And so you go to a different place and you can actually start to see, compare the two groups of thinking, or the two methodologies. The methodology first came through, and coming through a second time, you can actually look back and say, oh, look, there's a difference, and I can start to spot things. Now, the very first thing that I want to talk about before we get into actually mapping this out is this idea of theology, which is sort of like the theory of thought, and teleology, which is a method of thinking where you look at the justification of something in terms of the ends. So, what can I say? A theory of why we should pay tax, or a teleology is sort of a justification in terms of the human end use and cause. And it can be true, it can be internally rigorous, but it's completely on the behaviour side of the spectrum. I don't know if I can say so, but you often read things into philosophers will start to your flag and reading it through, it'll be a teleological argument. It's not that it's bad, it's just the sign for people to know that this is a sort of a domestic, for the audience, a quick answer to these basic questions now. So it's not so you shouldn't have teleology and theology. We shouldn't know the difference between the two and when to deploy it. So everyday things, interactions, it's teleologically, but theology is this bigger thing. So we've got the theory of knowledge and this, basically theory of knowledge. But it's not sort of the theory of knowledge of what's the difference between knowing something and believing something. This is more the theory of how knowledge is acquired and what is the structure of it. And the actual theory of whether you have a theory of knowledge or you don't, there's this sort of overall structure. So if I can say this, if you've got three areas of the whiteboard to talk about, you've got the theory of knowledge about how sophisticated you are, or are you still behaviourally, do you have a behaviour structure of knowing in terms of I know this because I'm rich or something like that, or I know this because I'm successful, I know this because I'm popular, I get many votes on YouTube, Facebook, so I get lots of ticks of it, or knowledge on the opposite end is mathematical knowledge. I know this is true because it's true mathematically. That's complete, and your nuances. Then you have the middle board, which is the actual structure of knowledge, and I'd like to talk about that. All right. And this is a whiteboard. You can fill it in as you come along. And finally, there's this behavioural circuitry of I teach one person reads a book, finds something out, and their behaviour will be influenced by the society. That feedback loop determining what the average person, 99% of the people, will know in terms of know-how and information and how they'll value it. And you know, valuing it is this process in which the society will convert that knowledge into social capital, which can be converted into money capital, but there's this economy of society going about it, that's cultural area. So so we've got those three areas coming up, and this is one of those deeper things where you've got a problem, and to crack it you need not just one blackboard, but three blackboards to look at. And we'll just go on those three blackboards again. One is knowledge theory and your knowledge strategy, and sort of all the levels of that. That is, there'd be some people who say there's no such thing as knowledge strategy. It's just if you know the right thing, the right place, you can get places. They're all behavioural. Then there's people who are saying at a level that there are these three whiteboards, for instance. So the people who would, in that knowledge strategy, there's nothing. Nah, just shut up and learn how to behave. Or you can, you write that person, that blackboard, and on that first blackboard, you also write people who say, look, there are these three blackboards, these goes across, and there's even higher levels, but leave it a blank area. And so this is a knowledge strategy. When you define a class, you can leave it open with new facts to put in. Now, even that is something which is a behavioural thing people won't do because they'll get punished or won't get rewarded for it. So you can sort of see So I'm going across. The middle board is the actual structure of knowledge and information. I'll have a chat with that before. The last board is this sociology of going across. Now, just sort of a seed example. There's a few things that's got me thinking like this. One is doing really thorough researches on things and coming up to a point and moving things forward. And when people encounter sufficient things that they're unfamiliar with, you see this behavior shut down. And I'm got an unusual behavior because I'm coming in from an unusual direction, sort of doubly unusual. One is from having this brain thing, having to restructure and rego, and having a different trajectory in the first place. It's sort of double set me out from one removed, which is reasonable, twice removed. Look, that's really hard. And then there's other things which can trip off in terms of if you're not socializing your knowledge every day, and this is a little bit, it can be difficult to communicate. You get this behavior, and you'll note, well, I can note it very thoroughly coming across there. And sort of going back up to the first board, there is this thing called mathematical knowledge. That is, that your knowledge or understanding can be converted to symbolic logic, and you can actually say, reason that this is not impossible. I think that's the most, it's really that really sophisticated understanding from Bayesian theory of saying, well, this is not impossible, therefore this possibility goes forward. It's the entire idea of this complex interplay between rationalist thinking, rationalist and experimental thinking. I'll get back that, to that in a while. I want to go over a story. Those people who have been with me have listened to my trek through there's people graduating the HSC having a big old party at the moment, so that's why HSC is the final year study. And I've got a son who's this final year, we went through the graduation, and everyone's, I don't know, sort of a bizarre thing. Everyone's so happy that they've done 2.5 years, 1.5 years study. And they're about to sit their exam, and it's a typical Australia, we're partying away, don't worry. Yeah, it's more sort of bliss. And at least that's great, that people are relaxed partying before they actually have the exam, which is great. It's a great thing to see. But getting back to this, there's a few things that you have, I suppose, the maths and studying through it, you get this consistent counter behavior thing that you keep on saying, oh, this is shown here, I don't know sufficient, I'll do this, and look, I don't get a non-positive behavioural feedback to it. So it's, I've almost mathematised that next level of it. Sorry, there's someone coming out here as I'm going around the park at night. So let's go through a particular story of my track through philosophers and understanding new things. This is a long, quiet track, and then the interaction and then the reflection, and then hopefully I'll get back into describing this middle whiteboard, which I think will be more or less familiar with little sections of it, but there'll be a section that you might recognize, but then I'm going to paint a full central whiteboard. It's taking quite a lot of mental capacity just to put this all together. The story for three philosophers, realizing that the actual basis of what I was thinking is philosophically based, began reading through certain philosophers, i.e., and this is sort of very small, like a Egyptologist tracking out, looking at where the water flows in the landscape. I was trying to look at, say, the origin of matter and mass and how you teach it. What was the really origin, real origin of it? And that followed me down to the landscape of 8th century theological absolute confusion in which we produced new concepts due to sheer confusion. So we didn't know what was the problem looking. We're looking in the opposite way, and the sheer confusion of mental chaos produced new ideas. This is not the model that we do have. That most people have. We have the idea that studied thought, we look under here and we do the right thing. But if you can imagine total chaos of 8th century to early Renaissance, Middle Ages thought, was throwing up all these leads that people were then trying to bolt and steer together, and we almost fell into the modern age looking at, which is different from the theory that we teach at school, saying we were stupid, but we were really smart about getting smart. We're actually dumb about getting smart. This is a contradiction. So that contradictory thing in terms of behavior management of my knowledge is the thing is, shut up, don't study it, you're on the wrong track. Now, normally if you don't have sufficient basis, sort of a mathematical basis, you'd listen to that and say, oh, what bloody hell, I'm on the wrong pack. Everyone was absolutely spanking brilliant, not mad, and we weren't going up in this real labyrinth of blind alleys producing things. So Newton knew what he was saying, and he said pretty much, well, what's said in the textbook. But, of course, as he studied, he said nothing similar to what is put in the textbook, and the ideas of mass and all that complex is not there. As you follow it up, you say, okay, well, it's a tough thing. Let's start doing some long-term research and seeing where you land up. Because you're not going to move out of ignorance by repeating the behavior that got you there in the place. And when you speak to an ignorant person, the last thing you're going to do is listen to their precise words of wisdom, of not asking questions, going on with it. It's not disrespectful, but it's just patently not the best use of time. So, if you can imagine, the majority of people say, it's in the textbook, shut up, put your hand out, get the money, and just continue the life, and then just drop dead at the end of it. Not worried, you've eaten your hamburgers, and you know, you've burnt your carb and all that type of stuff. And again, this was this life-changing thing, saying, would you have a bit of time, let's look at it. So what I started off with is to boot up, realizing that the philosophers I was talking were referring to the philosophical basis. So and one of the problems is of amateurs is that they cherry pick led by their belief, and so I did a systematic going through the first 40 philosophers. So down in podcast land a long time ago is me just churning through the first 40 philosophers. Now, we have a small window into to this, because I put those first 40 philosophers out there. Now, at that time, knowing that I was going to get along that way, I began to develop software for a strategic rollout, in that there were certain things I had to get to cognitive level to produce things out. I also had to podcast things fairly quickly and efficiently. And there was information sort of how to podcast and how things should be structured. And pretty much the same thing. People would do something, and why they'd do it is because there'd be a behavioural reward for it, and it's all behavioural, teleological logic in there. And sort of I said, well, that's okay, but, you know, strike out on a, could have been a 3-year, but it's only a couple of months project to write a podcasting process and machine and integrate it through such that it links several targets at the same time. And this is, if I can say, one of the problems with this behavioural stuff is that this person who is thinking behaviourally oriented can't think strategically to knock off 3 or 4 parallel things at the same time to actually get them. So we're up to the first 40 philosophers. And then going forward is reading one philosopher at a time, picking up the need for more, and seeing the structure of what's going across. I've actually stopped now because I bought a impossibly cheap black ink toner for my printer. That's what I do, is I print out a philosopher and just read it through exhaustively. But unfortunately, this cheap toner, it's run out. It's only done about 10 philosophers, and it's just run out, the little crappy thing. But I'll have to look at it. And it really doesn't matter, because other things can flood in where I go across. But going through these philosophers, eventually track forward, link into maths, link into the atomic theory, start to cross-link knowledge areas of quantum mechanics, maths, philosophy, cross it all together, see how Leibniz and Pythagoras all link together, having done thorough stuff. Now, this training is simply PhD training. When you have someone, you do a little research, you stop, you convert. And we are training people for this end point. Now, behaviour-wise, I didn't realise until you go back, if you do this in your real life, if you do your PhD, this one, in your real life, you get caned. You get, what is the point of doing that? What you're doing now serves no direct purpose. Now, of course, that is, i.e., the behavioural caging of people, and the lack of knowledge that you're going on several things. You're researching thoroughly every single philosopher going across, and you're building the technology to put it together and get it out there. But we come up and we go forward to look at a few philosophers, Locke and stuff like that. It all goes back down to references to goes back down to Bacon. Francis Bacon, I'll discuss about him. And he doesn't fit into a couple of categories. He's still someone who is linked to a patronage system. And you start to realise that the philosophy I get at is very limited to dealing with the problems of the Sahan, as does it supply a patronage system. So there are things that people accept their philosophy, but they don't realise that it has been, it's got corporate spin associated with it. And Francis Bacon is coming up to the really basic point, the start of applying systematic logic to your theory. Now, that's what I'm saying at the moment. I've got this big theory process that I want to burst through. I'm going to apply a bit of scientific processor. And this is what the philosophers have done and recommended that you do, and Descartes in his method has said pretty much the same sort of thing, but people will discount him. And one of the things which people have commented, what is this process that people do not think logically, do not think ethically? And you can hear the people going over the top out there, is they have commented about, it hasn't escaped philosophers' attention. Bacon described it as four idols, the idols of the theatre. These are things of poor quality thinking. So this one's a strange, strong things that these people say. Our society is being held back by poor quality thinking. And I say, at this point in time, why don't we actually start that as a proposition and actually move on from there? The reason you don't do it is because we are victims of poor quality thinking. We behaviorally modify how we think and go through. We say, well, bugger you, I'm going to close the door, I'm not going to let you have your your three whiteboards. You can just rack off. In these rare instances where people were allowed to continue to write, you had Bacon saying his four idols. I think he had idol of the theatre. But basically, where you actually don't, you have these other things in your head, these behavioural things in your head, which mean that you don't think. And Descartes said that thinking taught by traditional methods through schools and through societies is a parody of reason. And I wish I could actually find that quote again, but it's definitely definitely in there. Now, what is interesting is the actual devices that people of the time use. One is writing in Latin and reading a little bit about the Latin, how that restricted the mathematical expression. Particularly Latin, it's not a mathematical language. So Newton was bound by it a little bit, which allowed them to be free. The idea that their understanding of knowledge is they weren't progressing how you should, there was a big breakthrough that you should think for yourself. The entire Enlightenment that, which is sort of like we're in a pre-Enlightenment place. In Enlightenment, so before the Enlightenment, God was just giving us iPhones. God was just giving us the technology of the birds, the bees. We had to appreciate it and we had to have corporate allegiance to God. And what happened is that people said, oh, I don't know how that's engineered. I can see that little chip in the T-1000. I wonder what's happening here. And so there's this great movement of enlightenment and the feeling up that you mean that there isn't a God corporation, which was the enlightenment. And, of course, people said, like Leibniz and Kant, the continental Europeans said, yep, there is still. It's just, you just got to look for the smoke and mirrors. There is. It's sufficient. It's complicated. You probably won't understand it, especially the way that I've described it. And I've come to it. And it's something that I have to work my entire life because it's never quite finished. Now, we have actually created a new god of technology where people really don't know, understand how it works. And it only works because you're good at Facebook or you use a Macintosh. It's brilliant sort of new religious thing that come across. Now, what's more is that, we go forward and we go back and you discover, well, this is really interesting and pretty much like reading Feet Cheese of Nancy Uecoff's dog. You read about Francis Bacon and he wrote the Constitution or the Act of Parliament for setting up the colonies of Virginia and Labrador, whatever it is, Newfoundland. He wrote the Constitution's Acts of Parliament, structured them, and eventually wrote a fictional piece called New Atlantis. And the structure. And New Atlantis, when you read about it, you got this beautiful trans structure where this is all linked together. So New Atlantis, his fiction goes into the American Constitution and goes into Gulliver's Travels influence Voltaire, which fires up the, sort of like a spark, hitting another spark, hitting another spark, gets the enlightenment going properly. At all the same time, we're moving forward in fiction, in poetry, and in science are moving together as one. And now, what's happened is that our, which is okay, and the major point is that we have the New Atlantis published in a particular time by him, acknowledged by him, by the publisher. All these facts, the New Atlantis story is actually written in, and besides Gulliver's Travel, American Constitution, it's also the foundation of the Royal Society, how science should be done, the science fiction aspect. Now, what is really interesting is that this is a revelation. Now, how can you study, how can you discover something which is there in plain sight? The idea is that the behavioural assessment is that you must be a nutcase. So when you see Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the draft of the Constitution, said, look, I'm inspired by bang, 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 one of the people's Bacon, because he wrote this. Now, I'm only saying that I have two instances where I've gone forward and said, I've put a quick note to the person in the science show, and he said, interesting, send the brief. I sent the little brief of evidence, nothing. So this is a really critical piece of information, that the formation of our science that we know is based on two major critical things. One is the invention, reflective committee which invented the word scientist, with Reverend Whewell looking at Francis Bacon and how unsuitable Newton was as a character to build a scientific nation at the start of the Industrial Revolution. But, you know, the Industrial Revolution needed scientists. And the second aspect is this new aspect. There's two really understanding things. One is the Baconian origin as we switch forward. And so this goes nowhere. So I can only assume, because I'm not behavioural responses, if I don't get a response, I'll write another one saying, do you know this? And look, occasionally there are certain things which are interesting. He gave me a few leads on Newton who invented the cat flap, and I gave him a lead that Shakespeare was influenced by science, writing Hamlet, which is about astronomy, and Tycho Brahe. All links together. But it's not going forward. Now we come across, so the idea is this Bacon, New Atlantis, the idea that my model of how knowledge goes forward is such that I place at the highest point the behavioural engine sitting on top of the knowledge. Now that behavioural engine must work, and it can't be contradicted. It can't be this behaviour engine has left these back gaps and blind points in our knowledge. That's a fundamental thing. And my behavioural reaction with that, this is third panel stuff, my reaction is that I treat this new knowledge, which is really old knowledge, which is blind, I should say blind knowledge, I treat it with a deep understanding of, it's really hard to concentrate with people screaming, having fun while you're walking around the park. And I really hope I am improving in these aspects. I have definitely improved going forward. So you've got this mechanism. So what we are seeing is a blindness in knowledge reflecting right across the structure of knowledge, right back into the behavior of knowledge and information, the way things are oriented. And you see that this knowledge, which is factual, cannot move into common knowledge. And what is common knowledge? Because of behavioral structures, social behavioral structures on top of that. So that's quite interesting. And that's interesting, and the idea that you will have a this three whiteboard system where people have basically a little cheat sheet of how they will respond and behave to things. Now this will be all in all until another sequence came across. My daughter said, look, I'm studying science fiction and the role of it and definition of it. Listen to it. And I said, oh, for instance, did you know about the New Atlantis, blah, blah, blah? At which this friend of my wife's at the table said, that's rubbish. People don't know that Francis Bacon wrote any of his own work, which is actually in fact true, that people aren't sure that Francis Bacon didn't write some of Shakespeare. And there's these questions about this controversy, but now people just let it go. And therefore, everything you say has to be completely wrong. You've wasted your time doing any research whatsoever. It is not true. And I've said, oh, well, I can give you a brief of evidence for it. You know, I can give you the evidence for it. And no, you're wrong. And but what's more is that the people came up and said, the other people there said, have you not heard that person there has said that you're wrong? And you questioning her is saying, because you're just a scientist, you have no way of knowing anything that the arts people would know and stuff like that. And furthermore, well, she's a woman, and there is no such, you know, we've got these three women here all saying that you are definitely wrong. It's complete rubbish. Now, that to me, kind of putting it back, saying, well, I could say, what is missing here? So now, in that social thing, one of the things is with this entire blind behavior thing, that's what I put it down to, is that, now what is the key, what is the solution forward there? And essentially, where you can actually really think about it, and going through, is that you can break the idea of, you can have the stimulus and the behavior, and then that goes in a loop, meaning that you have a limited amount of information and your behavior, you know, you minimize this, the stimulus of negative behavior by restricting the information that you look at. You can look at that. But I think with all these things, you start to break it apart for the people who have got a behavioral slant on looking at information or knowledge. They can't see the two differences. The major thing is that if, and only if, you can actually say, how did you get there? How did we get to this information? And what is the consequence of your behavior? It's done this, done that, done that. Has these external influences. It means that everyone in the room says, well, we're not going to listen to any of this. We'll shut it down. Now, fortunately, people in podcast land, that's out there. But it's, you can sort of, there's some, but it's not, because the behavior is triggered by the knowledge, trying to push the knowledge is going to accelerate the behavior. It's this, you can mathematically describe it as a catastrophe curve. You can either push it all the way, and then try and actually win the people over. And what happens is that you push them one way, gather all your resources, and they've moved elsewhere. And they're basically laughing at you at the way what happens. Or you can formulate new questions that you can ask. Ask, what is this is the outcome. What is the consequences of it? What is the consequences if you're wrong? It's a more sophisticated, nuanced model view. Because essentially the behavior information structure is a sort of a very flat dimensional thing. It has no, the objective of behavior informational thing is not more information, it is the behavior coming out of it. Now, going back to the central blackboard, which is knowledge itself, one of the things is that if you have a blackboard or a whiteboard and you're writing things down, you can leave gaps for it and say, this is here, this is here, yet when we teach just this. And so we teach a little thread of science, and then we teach other things. So essentially, I'm going to talk about knowledge and information. So a knowledge is a set of generalized rules that you can apply to information. And the first thing that we have is expanding knowledge. That is, I can give you three basic new rules, and from that you can make 81 rules, for instance, just by combining them in a clever way. So I can teach you deduction, so that's observation, inference. And now, people teach that, but bear in mind, people are behaviourally powered, so they teach this in a behaviour context. And they teach it to you, and they don't actually teach you that we're teaching you a type of deduction. I wasn't really aware of this until I actually went right back and studied Bacon and looked at induction. So deduction is top down. You go from top rules down to smallest rules at all. And there's a capacity to do it. And it's beautiful thing is that induction, deduction, tests, if you put information and deduction together, you can actually test people's mechanism and produce marks from it. Now there's induction, which is a hypothesis where you can sense something outside and you can actually put an experiment to test the hypothesis, to put a hypothesis up there into the deductive category machine again. So you'll do one experiment but use the result again and again. So one scientist will discover a bacteria, do a series of experiments. So his one experiment will then enter the deductive paraphernalia of the entire world. Now, we actually teach a bit of induction, but we actually don't teach how it's structured and how there's this individual society crossover, which is another sort of aspect in here. So if you can imagine sort of revealing the deduction, induction, but also this social structure, which goes from the individual to society. Now, it goes to the individual proves themselves so they can be used for society. The individual discovers new quality and gives it into that social group of knowledge, which is there. Now, there is sort of another area of knowledge is that I'm evidently in a state, demonstrably in a state of improved knowledge about philosophy and the structure of these things. How have I done it? I haven't done it by deduction. I haven't done it by induction. I haven't done it, but I've used some of the principles associated with the machinery of it. The other piece of machinery is just something purely called study. This is contemplation, study, thought, deep thought. Now that's a person at the personal end. You can't sell study to a society. Study you can transfer study within a certain range of society interested in study. It goes across. So we've got this three areas there, and initially, I think people in the science labs teach a bit of deduction, disconnected from induction, but then they screw that up by adding a bit of deduction at the inductive steps, not going through, and then at the end of it, they say study, and people can't see how all three processes go together as a knowledge system. And at the end of it, that process goes on, and it's completely hijacked by behavioural things. I'm not going to fund that. That's very well, but you haven't got enough votes, that's going to go. We're going to kill this frog because I want to build a car park across there. You know, Donald Trump, tweet myself up. That's the way to go. But that's, even though this is imperfect, it's poorly taught, very not understood, and there are these behavioural gatekeepers saying that we're not going to even let you in the room to look at these three whiteboards. But that's just as knowledge. There's that information aspect of it. And information has... And why you need this is because of a methodology up the top, which I'll talk about. One is information. So I can observe something. It's going back to my case of the man reading the meat, man or woman reading the meter. I can observe it. I can integrate it, so I integrate the number 9 with voltage and date. I integrate it, bring it together, and then I can aggregate it to actually produce it in a series. So there's observation, integration, aggregation, and then analyze it. And in this process, I can actually add to that social value. Now, this is a strange thing, that the social values are being put on for the outside for that knowledge aspect, but in the information aspect, that information aspect can actually be put through social value. Now, the important thing is that I have to be, this will be really complicated because I have to be a qualified person to do that. So all this aspect is about getting information. Information is to attribute social value to it. And so there's almost this other complete social value economy which associates what we're doing. So it's sort of like this unseen miasma of social value analysis which comes into limit of knowledge and explains behaviour which looks very much like knowledge gathering. However, that person doing that set of process may have no knowledge of what they're doing. They may be just trained, and indeed many people operate without any deep knowledge of what they are doing. They are just trained as machines to operate in this, and their only link is behavior. Is behavior. They get paid for it. You know, the money aspect of it is a codification of social value. It's the most incredible thing. I put money across and this person will give me a piece of product. It's a social behavior. If I take something without putting the paper, I'm stealing it. And of course this has got nothing to do with anything scientific. It's all completely, completely social. But therefore I have a series of activities which look scientific but indeed are not scientific. They're parascientific, that is measuring something, measuring stuffing to make a recipe. If I make a cake, I do undergo a whole series of scientific processes, heating to a temperature, measuring through a thing, getting a thing, following a procedure, but I have at the end of the day made a cake because that's something I want to do, is to make some food or something like that. And that's not a knowledge thing. And, it's in the same thing. It is, know how, and I'm using knowledge to do something, but it's not in the same realm of using deductive reasoning or inductive reasoning. However, it's not to say that for the quality control, you're not actually using a bit of deductive stuff, i.e. that the information given to you is incomplete and you have to use deductive reasoning to migrate from one point to another point. So you're actually not generating new knowledge. You're using the fact of deductive reasoning to unpack condensed instructions. Okay, so it's an interesting thing. Now, let's move up another rung. So if you can see that there's now three general sections on knowledge acquisition, and then there's information processing, where information is converted into social currency, or it's as used in a functional way. So we can use this at a very functional level. Now, what is actually going on happening? What's the difference here? Well, the overall structure is that it's a whiteboard, and as the information comes along, it gets assembled. And this is essentially the PhD research thing of all information in and assembled in a structure. Now, this is actually contradictory to and an affront to the behavior thing, is because you want someone to put information aside immediately without processing it and move on, because that person is the most efficient, behaviorally responsive knowledge person. And and you can train people to really believe that's the way to go, because that's the, everyone else is trained that way, everyone's stamped out that way, and only when you have, I suppose in my case, two things happening. One is been trained as a research scientist, being in the saying, well, we can't put you in production because you don't follow instructions, you invent, we'll put you in this other productive area within that same area. So as a research scientist, you do PhDs, you play into that suit anyway, and you're allowed to be a research scientist without tripping these things up. And then you eventually see that as a research scientist, you don't interface with the broader area, which behavior you get these strong responses back. Now, the wake-up call, of course, is that we as a country have realized that we cannot sustain this blind behavioral link with our knowledge. We can't do that anymore. And by training our kids on the way that we were trained, training our kids to pass the exams that we wanted to pass, that's not going to cast that massive. So that's one area that's come through. So the second area, obviously, is where it's righto, you're isolated, rehabilitate yourself. You've got to get all the squares. And of course, the system is slowly crunching through. They're doing psychometric tests and drawing up a rehabilitation program, but it's weeks afterwards, months and months afterwards, still hasn't touched base. And I don't know how close I'll be or where the advantage is. But the important thing is that smash down, rebuild. And often disasters create canvases for renewal, when you have to rebuild bit by bit and see what comes back. So just in summary, what a tour. I suppose the key things is having a strategy of knowledge. That is, whether it's behavior or your three broad theoretical structure of knowledge, where anything can come in and you can just write it tentatively down. You don't have to throw it away. You don't have to reject it. As opposed, then the actual knowledge itself, whether it's divided into knowledge, which is in three parts, studying, deductive and inductive logic, coming across, so that would be trained application knowledge. Inductive would be scientific training. So very, very few people actually don't use inductive knowledge at all in their life. Then moving across to information, the information instruction of watching it in two ways. One, you can see the information grow in importance, but that information now grows into social value. We actually are mining the world around us for information creating social value. And we're doing this process, nothing to do with knowledge, it's just to gain value. Gain value is food, to do things, to repeat things. And we're using some of the aspects in that knowledge things to study inductive and deductive logic to actually quality control, do it, but we're actually not using it to gain any more knowledge. You can have someone who's very good at getting information, very good at making money, but doesn't grow their knowledge base whatsoever. And finally, we have this thing of looking at this knowledge and information, that activity, that social behavior is a behavior, and that behavior is shaped by how the society operates. And that creates a closed loop. And it means that this closed loop gets people to shed information. You can't get them accumulating toxic information, toxic ideas for themselves. And it goes across, and you can see behaviours in it. And that has itself with it certain laws that if you are told to drop information, you cannot fight back, because that's the origin of that is behaviourally limited. My theory, my hunch, is that if you can ask people to consider how they got to that situation, why they're sitting there and think, why are they interacting like that? That's one aspect. And the second aspect is the consequence of doing it. And finally, the consequence of doing something, it only has a consequence if... It's a subtle way of saying, could we have done it the other way? But if you can see the consequence of it, we can see it. And those two high level things of how to get there and what's the consequence is itself sufficient to actually bump you off the behavioural process. If your behavioural process, the one thing you don't do is you don't ask how you got there, you don't consider what the consequence is, you just do its behaviour training thing. So it's moving, operating on that behaviour aspect of it, that may unblock some aspects of it, and being able to actually teach or formulate teaching such that this overall understanding of information and behaviour and stuff like that allows you to manoeuvre within these things and actually structure the play, that when you are playing something cooking, you're not teaching science necessarily to them. Thanks a lot for listening. I have to get back soon. Bye. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.